Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. Today we will be reading the following articles: News and Reviews, Ask Model Railroader, Step by Step, and Model Railroader Hall of Fame nominees. The first section is News and Reviews, a quick look at Milwaukee Racine & Schroy HO Scale Buffer Car. Price $27.99, manufacturer, produced by AccuRail, available from Kalmbach Hobby Store at kalmbachhobbystore.com. Era, 2015 on. Comments: an HO scale Milwaukee Racine & Schroy buffer car is the latest addition to the Kalmbach Hobby Store. The injection molded plastic kit, produced in the United States of America by AccuRail Incorporated, uses the manufacturer's 6500 series Pullman Standard 4,750 cubic foot capacity, three-bay covered hopper tooling. The model was inspired by covered hoppers commonly found on unit ethanol and crude oil trains. On the prototype, buffer cars are placed between the locomotives and tank cars and at the end of the train. The cars are loaded with inert material. The kit features a one-piece body with molded longitudinal running boards. The longitudinal boards and end extensions, cast as a single unit, are modular installed. Other freestanding parts include the slope sheets, hatch cover, end cages, end braces, brake appliances, and crossover platforms. The underbody has molded shaker brackets and several modular installed parts, including 8 center sill sections, 3 outlet gates, bolster plates, and draft gearbox covers. A steel weight spans the top of the underbody. AccuRail recommends using cyanoacrylate, adhesive, or double-sided tape to attach the weight. Do not use solvent-based adhesives, as this may damage the plastic. Written, illustrated instructions printed on a double-sided sheet outline the 16-step assembly process. Suggested tools to build the kit include a hobby knife, sprue cutters, tweezers, and a small Phillips head screwdriver. The model's dimensions closely follow prototype drawings published in the December 1983 Mainline Modeler. At 4.4 ounces, the covered hopper is 0.4 ounces too light based on National Model Railroad Association Recommended Practice 20.1. The body-mounted AccuMate couplers are at the correct height. The 33-inch Delrin wheels are correctly gauged, but the car should ride on 36-inch wheel sets. If you model the modern era and need a buffer car for your unit, ethanol, or crude oil trains, you'll want to add this limited edition HO scale car to your fleet. The model is offered in one road number. Signed, Cody Grifno, Senior Editor. The next section is Ask Model Railroader. Industries for a 1940s Idaho Model Railroad. Question: I am looking for suggestions for industries for an Idaho Model Railroad in the 1940s. I'm working on building an HO scale 10 by 11 foot around the walls model railroad. I have decided to model a small town in rural Idaho along the Union Pacific in 1942. I am looking for a few plausible industries to include. I already have a team track and a small passenger station and have bent some of the facts to include coal service. I also have two small staging tracks. Do you have any suggestions that would make for lively operations while keeping the layout plausible within my constraints? Signed, Nate Simpson, Meridian, Idaho. Answer: Idaho, huh? I bet you can already guess my answer. Potatoes. In 1940, Idaho provided the United States with two-thirds of its potatoes. Nearly 80% of Idaho workers either owned a potato farm or worked on one. During World War II, the period you're modeling, potato production ramped up even above its usual levels to fill the nation's wartime larders. From January 1942 to January 1943, Idaho produced more potatoes than it did in the years 1935 to 1940 combined. So, I'd think that even on a small layout, each of your towns should have one or more potato warehouses. If you model harvest time, parentheses, in Idaho, this is generally September and October, close parentheses, your railroad should run plenty of hotshot reefer extras to haul all this produce. This will add to the challenge of running your usual passenger and freight locals, as they'll have to clear up when the spud extra comes through. But as an Idahoan, you might find the potato industry to be kind of obvious and boring. Luckily, there were other industries in the state in the 1940s. There was enough wheat farming that a grain elevator wouldn't be out of place. Mining was a big part of the state's early days, with gold, silver, zinc, lead, copper, manganese, and molybdenum among the ores extracted. The timber, paper, and wood products industries were also represented. And those are just the large producers in the state. You can always add an industry that receives freight from outside the modeled part of the world, like a coal or oil dealer, warehouse, grocery distributor, cold storage, or lumberyard. And universal industries like those team tracks you mentioned are always a good idea. Signed, Stephen Ott. Question. I always thought N-gauge track was the go-to for narrow-gauge HO equipment. I found out yesterday that is not true. I got a model kit for an HO N3 locomotive. Everything was going smoothly until I discovered the wheels and trucks supplied with the kit are spaced too far apart for N-gauge track. The distance between wheel flanges is about an eighth of an inch too much. So what gauge track do I look for, buy, and use with this locomotive? Signed, Horace Veet, Craig, Alaska. Answer, you're right. N-scale track is the wrong gauge for HON3 trains. N-scale track gauge is 9 millimeters, while HON3, 36-inch narrow gauge at a scale of 1 to 87.1, works out to about 10.5 millimeters. 3-foot was the most commonly used narrow gauge in the United States. Some of the most famous narrow gauge railroads in the country ran on 36-inch gauge rails, including the Denver and Rio Grande Western, Rio Grande Southern, East Tennessee and Western North Carolina, parentheses, or Tweetsie, close parentheses, Colorado and Southern, White Pass and Yukon, and several short lines owned and operated by Southern Pacific. There were dozens more. You didn't just imagine that N-scale track is used in HO scale, though. N-scale's 9mm gauge comes out to just about 30.5 inches in HO scale. Although it wasn't as popular as 36-inch gauge, 30-inch gauge prototype did exist. And the simplicity of using N-scale locomotive mechanisms to model HO scale narrow gauge equipment has made HON30, also called HON2.5, a well-known modeling scale. If you want to model an HON3, you can without much difficulty. Some HON3 modelers, to whom historical authenticity is important, hand-lay their rails, but that's not necessary. HON3 track and trains are commercially available. Track is offered by such companies as Micro Engineering and Pico. Locomotives and rolling stock in HON3 are a little harder to get your hands on. Brass locomotives and brass, resin, and 3D-printed car kits are available. Look in hobby shops and at train shows for products from Blackstone Models, parentheses, a subsidiary of Soundtracks, close parentheses. San Juan Details at sanjuandetails.com also offers some Colorado and Southern prototype car kits in HON3. The Ask Model Railroader section is conducted by Stephen Ott. Send questions to Senior Associate Editor Stephen Ott at asktrains@trains.com. Question. In your Ask Model Railroader column, quote, speed matching DCC locomotives were better consisting, end quote, from December 2022, you suggest turning off the locomotive's momentum because momentum will interfere with speed matching. My question is, how do I know if the ESU decoders in my locomotives are programmed with momentum? Signed, Pat Stetson. Answer. You can check your locomotive's DCC momentum setting by putting your locomotive on a programming track and reading the value of two configuration variables, CV3 and CV4. The first, CV3, is the setting for acceleration. The value should be somewhere between 0 and 31. The higher the value, the longer it will take your locomotive to get up to speed. 0 is an immediate response. Each point of CV value above that means a speed change of one speed step will take approximately 1/10 of a second. So a value of 5 means your engine will take about 5 seconds to go from speed step 0 to step 10, parentheses, half a second per step, close parentheses. Configuration variable 4 likewise handles deceleration. Each point of value of this CV means it takes 1/10 of a second to slow down by one speed step. There's a practical way to test it too. Put your locomotive on a DCC layout and quickly crank the throttle all the way up to speed step 28. Note whether it works its way up to speed gradually or takes off at full speed right away. Let it run, then quickly dial the throttle back down to 0. If the locomotive slows gradually, it's programmed with momentum. If it stops immediately, it isn't. Question: I have a trestle over a deep ravine on my layout and would like to automatically slow DCC locomotives approaching the bridge to avoid too rapid an entry. Is there a method to provide such quote-unquote auto deceleration? Signed, Paul Savello, Cedar City, Utah. Answer: such a thing might be possible, but it would be insanely difficult. You would need a circuit to detect the locomotive as it enters the approach to the bridge. You would need some way to detect the DCC address of the locomotive in question. Then you'd need a DCC-connected programmable system, like an Arduino, to send a command to the DCC bus to slow down that locomotive. Step 1 is easily doable, step 3 is possible, but probably prohibitively complicated, and I have no idea how you'd accomplish step 2. A scale ACI scanner, perhaps? Now, if you had a direct current layout, you could just add a resistor to lower the voltage to that stretch of track. But since the voltage to a DCC-equipped locomotive's motor is governed by the decoder, that tactic would not work reliably and might cause the locomotive to stall completely if the voltage dropped below the requirements for sound effects. So the short answer is no, sorry. I would instead suggest putting a rule in the employee timetable requiring reduced speed on that bridge. If your operators forget or ignore that rule, a track side signal set to, quote, limited clear, end quote, or, quote, medium clear, end quote, aspect should serve as a reminder. Question: do you have any suggestions on how to replace trucks on Walther's HO Horizon cars, item number 932-6073? Signed, Daniel Kielsey. Answer: that part number corresponds to an HO scale Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority commuter car. The Horizon Fleet passenger cars, used by Amtrak as well as municipal transit authorities like MBTA, were built by Bombardier. Those cars ride on General Steel Industries G70 outside bearing trucks. In addition to William K. Walther's, Rapido Trains also makes HO scale versions of these cars. Luckily, Rapido also sells its GSI-70 truck separately. I can't promise the Rapido trucks will fit the Walther's car without modifications, but it's worth trying a pair. If they don't fit the Walther's car's kingpins, or if they alter the height of the cars, you might have to rebuild the car's bolsters with styrene. There's an article on our website that offers tips on how to do it. trains.com/MRR/how-2/tips-4-better-passenger-cars-car-height. The next section is Step by Step by Tom McCulloch. Tom McCulloch shares how he made electromagnetic uncouplers for his HO scale Rochester and Lake Erie Railroad. He has made 50 of them using off-the-shelf components found at big box retailers and electronics supply houses. Photos by the author. Do-it-yourself electromagnetic uncouplers. All the locomotives and freight cars on my HO scale layout are equipped with Cady knuckle couplers. I enjoy the operating enhancement of uncoupling cars without having to reach into the layout. I find that the illusion of a detailed model railroad scene is spoiled when a giant hand and a pointed stick are introduced to break up a train. However, I don't like the appearance of permanent magnets between the rails, and I've found no adequate way to hide them. The permanent magnets that are about the thickness of the roadbed and fit under the ties work well and are hidden, but they will uncouple any cars that happen to be spotted over them, so inadvertent uncoupling is common. I tried using commercial electromagnetic uncouplers, but found them to be unreliable and difficult to mount. That's when I decided to construct my own electromagnetic uncouplers, following a concept I saw in Model Railroader many years ago. If you're looking for a hands-free option for uncoupling cars, give these techniques a try. Tom McCulloch's first article for Model Railroader, quote, Big Time Railroading on a Club Layout, end quote, appeared in the September 2008 issue. Step 1. Constructing and installing the electromagnet. I construct my electromagnetic uncouplers using off-the-shelf components. First, I cut a 1.5-inch long piece of half-inch black iron pipe, parentheses 0.84-inch outside diameter by 0.11-inch wall thickness, close parentheses. Then I cut out a half-inch wide section, giving the pipe a U-shape. Next, I use two-part epoxy to attach two pieces of 3/4-inch by 3/4-inch by 1/8-inch aluminum angle to the pipe. I made a fixture to hold the angle in position while the epoxy cures. I wind the magnet with approximately 250 loops, parentheses 80 feet, close parentheses, of 26-gauge magnet wire. The wire should not extend above the opening in the top of the pipe. Next, I cut a 1-inch wide by 2-inch long opening in the roadbed and subroadbed. This is best done while laying track, as it's difficult to cut the opening from below the layout. I then fasten the uncoupler to the subroadbed with two wood screws through the holes in the aluminum angle. This draws the pipe gently against the bottom of the ties. The magnet has to be installed snugly against the bottom of the ties. If it's suspended below the ties, the magnetic field at the coupler trip pins will be too weak to be effective. Installed at the correct height, the magnet provides plenty of force to open the couplers. It's long enough that exact spotting of the cars isn't critical. I finish this step of the project by placing masking tape over the opening, then ballasting the track. Since the ballast conceals the location of the electromagnet, I mark the location with pieces of stained strip wood. Step 2. Power supply, operation, and timer. The uncoupler coil resistance is about 5 ohms, so it draws 4 amps when operated at 20 volts DC. I energize the magnet through relay contacts and a momentary contact push-button switch. In the fascia-mounted control panel shown in Image 1, the toggles and red lights are for turnouts, the red push buttons activate the uncouplers, and the toggles with green lights control the siding power. The transformer powering the magnet must be rated to at least 5 amps. The one I use produces 24 volts at no load, but drops to 20 volts at the 4-amp load. If the output voltage drops too low, the magnet will lose its effectiveness. For reliable uncoupling, the cars spotted over the electromagnet need to have slack in the couplers. If the cars are stretched, the electromagnet will not open the couplers. I push cars over the uncoupler location, energize the electromagnet, and then pull the lead car away. If a car needs to be spotted further down the track, I push the lead car back over the uncoupler, re-energize the uncoupler to open the knuckles, and then push the car to its spot. Once I started using the electromagnets, I found it awkward to hold the digital command control cab, operate the throttle, and depress the electromagnetic push button simultaneously. I needed to keep the uncoupler energized for a few seconds with a single press of the button. After reading an article in the November 2015 Model Railroader on transistor timing circuits, I did some research, purchased components from Electronic Supply House, and developed the transistor timer circuit shown in Image 2. The circuit may look complicated, but once studied, it's not difficult to figure out. A larger capacitor will keep the transistor powered for a longer period of time, and therefore keep the electromagnet energized for a longer period. I ultimately selected a capacitor that keeps the electromagnet energized for about 3 seconds, sufficient time to uncouple the cars. There is concern about keeping the electromagnet energized for too long, as it will get warm and could be damaged. To be safe, I installed a 5-amp fuse in the power supply output for the electromagnets. I've installed 50 of these electromagnet uncouplers with the associated timers on my model railroad. The layout is operated regularly with local members of the Central Arizona Model Railroad Club. The uncouplers work well, and operators enjoy the flexibility of hands-free uncoupling and the ability to spot cars at many locations on the HO scale Rochester and Lake Erie Railroad. The next section is Model Railroader Hall of Fame nominees. A scratch builder, a photographer, and a publisher who each promoted our hobby, by Bryson Sleppy. It's time for the next installment in the Model Railroader Hall of Fame series. If you didn't know, we're creating a Hall of Fame for the 90th anniversary year of Model Railroader. In order to be nominated for the Hall of Fame, a nominee must have made a significant contribution to the model railroading hobby and must be no longer living. Keep in mind that voting is cumulative, so be sure to vote for months that you have missed. Do you have a model railroader in mind who we may have overlooked? Send an email to the addresses listed on page 8 of this issue. The first nominee is Victor Roseman, 1948-2024. Victor Roseman, or Vic, was a skilled model railroader and historian. Having many credits in both books and articles, he often used the byline V.S. Roseman. This work, which spanned from detailing to operations, appeared regularly in various publications throughout the United States and Europe. I personally enjoyed Vic's many articles throughout the pages of Model Railroader regarding passenger and marine modeling. Though Vic didn't have a model railroad himself, he built many detailed dioramas that he photographed both indoors and outdoors. The first work of Vic's to show up in the pages of Model Railroader was in March 1977's Trackside Photos, depicting a meet between an Alco RS2 and a Budd rail diesel car. Since the photo was taken outdoors under natural light, I couldn't tell if it was the model or the prototype. Just 3 months later, he would earn his spot on the cover of the magazine featuring a Central Railroad of New Jersey F3. Victor passed away on January 5, 2024, in Brooklyn, New York. The next nominee is Dean Freitag, 1924-2010. Dean Freitag, well known for being an early proponent of scratch-building steel mill structures from styrene, was an inspiration to many heavy industry modelers. Dean was fascinated by the steel industry and taught himself the inner workings of the industry. Many of his scratch-built steel mill structures populated his South Ridge Line's HO scale layout. The layout was featured in the November 1980 issue of Model Railroader with an update in November 2003. With his knowledge, he assisted various manufacturers with new product research and development. In addition to being a well-known modeler and clinician, Dean was also a prolific author. Throughout more than half a century, he wrote more than 50 articles and 2 books, The History, Making and Modeling of Steel, available from William K. Walters Incorporated, and The Cyclopedia of Industrial Modeling, from Plastruct. Both are still available after multiple reprints. He shared his love of the hobby with anyone who would listen. Dean passed away on December 25, 2010, in Ashland, Ohio. The next nominee is Harold H. Karstens, 1925-2009. Harold Karstens joined the staff of Model Railroader Craftsman as an associate editor in 1952. Affectionately known as Hal, he became the company's president in 1962. He became well known by many through this position. Following his rise to the company presidency, Karstens went on to found several other magazines, including Creative Crafts, The Miniature Magazine, and Railfan. His first article was published in Railroad Model Craftsman while he was a student in high school. Hal served as the president of the former Hobby Industry Association from 1970 to 1971 and was awarded the HIA's Meritorious Award of Honor. He also received the NMRA's Distinguished Service Award and was named a pioneer of model railroading. In addition, he was a past president of the Train Collectors Association, Incorporated. Former Kalmbach Vice President Russ Larson remembered Karstens as, quote, having a good sense of humor, but also being a good competitor and conducting his publishing house with integrity, end quote. Hal died on June 23, 2009. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777. Or email contact@aftersight.org. Thank you for listening.